We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, Jesse, are you ready for rapid fire?
Is it that time already?
It is. It is. And there's a couple things I think that I've still kind of got queued up that I might work into rapid fire here.
Uh-oh. But
ESPN is predicting a tight end to be Notre Dame's breakout player this season. Is it more critical to their success to have a breakout tight end, wide receiver, or running back this year?
I would have to say it is more crucial for their success that a wide receiver be the breakout player on the offense. And I have to say that ESPN picking tight end was a sleepy and lazy answer. Anyone could just slap on tight end on Notre Dame and say, that's the breakout player, because what gets drafted at Notre Dame?
Tight ends.
So
they have a breakout tight end like every other year on average.
Right. So they spent like 30 seconds on this question and they're like, oh yeah, tight end. That's the easy one, but they definitely need a wide receiver. We talked about this. Denbrock had 2,000-yard receivers at LSU last season. Notre Dame hasn't had a 1,000-yard receiver in I don't know how many years.
Chase Claypool, 2019. That was the last one.
If Notre Dame wants to have success and be serious in the big games, you know, Texas A&M, Florida State, USC, playoffs, however far they get in the playoffs, they need a stud wide receiver. They need someone that, hey, on a 3rd and 3, we know our guy is going to win a quick slant and we're just going to put the ball on him and pick up the first down. You know what I mean? Just a guy, you know, is going to do that. Like to me, the honest comparison is like when the Cowboys got rolling this last season, everyone knew CeeDee Lamb was going to catch the ball, but they couldn't stop him. That's what Notre Dame needs. It's just a guy that, you know, is going to get the ball. That's their playmaker, but you really can't do anything about it.
That's what Michael Mayer was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But Michael Mayer doesn't have the breakaway speed of a wide receiver. So there's a big difference if it's a tight end versus a wide receiver. And that's why it needs to be a wide receiver, because you're going to get more explosive plays if that go-to guy is a wide receiver as opposed to a tight end. As great as tight end and as great a pass catcher as Michael Mayer was, you can still only be so downfield when a tight end is the consistent go-to guy. And that's why it needs to be a wide receiver, because even in the running backs room, like a couple of those guys are going to step up and they're going to be great. And you're probably going to have a couple of running backs, just like 2 years ago when it was Estime and Diggs, you're going to have a couple of guys pushing for around 1,000 yards. But, you know, like the way that that Dylan McCullough has broken that up. He's got all these different jobs that he divvies up. And so you're going to see, a handful of guys who are going to be getting it, but they need to be more vertical. Marcus Freeman knows that. Mike Denbrock knows that. That's why they went out and brought in guys like Chris Mitchell and Bo Collins. And so it absolutely has to be a wide receiver that needs to be the breakout guy. The closest thing they've had to 1,000 yards since that Claypool season was Kevin Austin, 888 yards in 2021. So they need a receiver to start hauling the groceries a little bit more consistently. Fill in the blank. It is blank that ESPN has picked Notre Dame as one of the 10 teams they believe can win the women's basketball national championship.
To me, it's not surprising that ESPN has picked Notre Dame as one of the 10 teams that they think can win the women's national championship. Had you told me this a month ago, I would say that they were crazy. But the women's right. team ended on a stretch that no one else in the country can really say. I mean, they beat Louisville, ranked team. They beat Virginia Tech, winner of the ACC regular season championship, with a healthy Kitley. They go on to beat Louisville, Virginia Tech, and North Carolina State in the ACC tournament. That's five straight ranked wins. I've talked about it before. The Notre Dame women's team is good at home. They're good on the road. They're good at neutral places. And realistically, they have one of the top scorers in the country in Hannah Hidalgo. And the thing that separates them the most is they're playing elite defense down the stretch. And so right. you combine a player that can lead the nation in scoring, be a top five player in the nation in scoring, lead the nation in steals, and then a really good defense on the back end, it's going to be hard to beat a team like Notre Dame. And then you throw in, the experience that they had outside of the ACC. They've played really good teams outside of conference play, and they've won some of those games. So when you're looking at a resume of someone who's been quote-unquote battle-tested during the regular season, Notre Dame is very well battle-tested. They just kind of had to work out some synchronization issues of injuries and, who the team was going to run through and et cetera. But they're playing really great defense right now, and I think that's going to get them a long way in the tournament.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, we talked about it this week. They've held opponents to a little over 56 points a game during the 8-game winning streak that they're on right now, and they're not just doing it against anybody. The last five teams they've played have been ranked, and they've all been repeat opponents, so you've got scouting reports on each other and everything else, and they're still holding them to that. And it just shows how far they've come over the course of the season and really how good they can be. And again, like you talk about, we know what they can be offensively, but defense has been the difference. And as ESPN pointed out in this little paragraph that they wrote, that those teams that they played in the streak have all been different, distinctively different kinds of teams as well. So they've played great against, different styles of offense and still been able to score against different styles of defense as well. Is depth an issue? Sure. But, that's mainly if they get into foul trouble and that kind of stuff. And as we've talked about, they've won national championships before using just six players in the rotation. So, they can do it.
Those ACC refs from the tournament should not be invited to the NCAA tournament. So many whistles and fouls.
Man. And it was like, it's just crazy how, how differently they can start calling a game from one half to the next, because things were, one minute they're letting them play, and then maybe they're like, oh, we've let this thing get too far out of control, and now they're calling a bunch of stupid stuff. You're exactly right, but that's an issue, I think, at all levels, unfortunately. But I think really the fact that they've showed themselves to be more than capable as a zone defensive team as well, I think, especially against some of these more athletic teams like an NC State the other day, when they can go to zone, what obviously you can start getting hurt if the other team gets hot from beyond the arc. But Notre Dame is also they were the best 3-point defensive team in the ACC, 26th in the nation in 3-point defense, the fourth best power five team in the nation in 3-point defense, so the tournament's all about matchups, and they get the right matchups I think that they can. I think that they can do it. I really do.
I think the main thing for them is, I hope that they can get a 3 seed and avoid a potential 1-4 in Sweet 16. I think that's what's going to go a long way for them.
Yeah, and I think they will. I know a lot of people are talking about a number 2. I think 3 is really realistic. It's going to be really interesting to see what the committee thinks of them when everything comes. That road win, you know, like you mentioned, they've been like the fact that they have road wins at UConn and at Tennessee this year, I think can potentially go a long way. And even like, you know, winning at Duke and at Florida State, those kind of things, I think can go a long way. So I think that they've got a really good shot at being the number 3. And I think, just like you said, I think that that's going to be vital, avoiding that number 1 and, you know, having a 2-3 matchup potentially instead.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number 1 fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it, 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number 1 fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all 3. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, the men's team saw their season potentially come to an end today with their loss to Wake Forest in the ACC tournament. They won a game in the first round of the ACC tournament yesterday. They lost 72-59 to Wake Forest, a team they beat a couple of weeks ago at home. How do you feel about this season now that it is potentially over with a 13-20 record in Micah Shrewsbury's first year?
Honestly, I feel like this season was a success. They got to the ACC tournament. They won a game in the ACC tournament. And then they got to a 5-12 matchup today. And on paper, you would say that they should probably lose that game. Did I still think that they had a shot of beating Wake Forest today? Sure. But I didn't think that they realistically should beat Wake Forest. And I didn't realistically think that they'd have an above 500 record in the conference, an overall record, etc. And then when you start looking in terms of like master plan, I would say that Notre Dame is ahead of schedule because I really didn't expect like a potential winning season until year three. And I think that's a usual year for any sport. 1 year you're kind of, because I mean, you can't take Marcus Freeman as the example, because a lot of programs, when you enter as a head coach, it's for reasons of the team was probably bad and they had to get rid of a coach. And so your job is to come in and make things better. And that's kind of unfortunately what happened with the men's team and Mike Bray is, you know, Shrewsbury had a lot to clean up. So I didn't realistically think this thing would just get turned around in year one or year two, really. But I think that there is a good expectation or good chance that they could be an above 500 team next year and potentially a bubble team on getting into the NCAA tournament. So I feel really good about them being ahead of schedule, and I feel really good about them establishing, you know, kind of their foundational, you know, how we're going to play, you know, in terms of defense, effort, etc. And now we can kind of start improving, you know, the scoring and the shooting and those sort of things. So I think they're ahead of schedule, and I feel great about it because I think we're going to see, you know, we're going to see a new era of basketball at Notre Dame. I think you're going to see a type of offense and scoring that we haven't seen at Notre Dame in a while. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
You saw the kind of positive signs that you wanted to see from this team. Somebody said yesterday, I think, that the team at the end of the season that Notre Dame had would have beaten the team at the beginning of the season by 50 points or something to that effect. And I think that that's probably right. They made the kind of incremental, like there were stretches in January, during that losing streak, it's like, man, can this team score at all? And, you know, then it started coming around. And you look at the fact that Marcus Burton ends up being the ACC Rookie of the Year. And a lot of people were down on, young Shrewsbury for shooting too much, you know, early in the season. And by the time it was all said and done, he was a much more consistent shooter. These were all by and large, it was just a very young and inexperienced team, and they figured a lot of things out. And as you said, Micah Shrewsbury laid the foundation for what he wants this program to be, built on defense, built on effort. And, you know, he called the team out for lack of effort a couple of different times. And since that point, that's really when we've started to see this upswing and an improvement of play. You know, really since that happened, I think it was like late January when he called him out. So, you know, 13-20 on the surface, it doesn't look great, but when you kind of go micro and you look at how things improved over the course of the season and how much more they won at the end of the season, I think that there's nothing but positive expectations for this program going forward. You get a couple more scores, you know, continue to get a little bit more size in there, I think that they can be really good here within the next couple of years. And like you said, knocking on the door, maybe a bubble team for the tournament next year, if not even, you know, on top of the bubble a year from now. DK says he's pissed because coach was talking natty before the season. I think DK has been talking to Vince about that. Remember Vince getting all upset talking about national championships during his introductory press conference. Fill in the blank. There's talk that the Chicago Bears could keep Justin Fields and draft Caleb Williams at number one. It would be blank if that happens.
It would be outrageous if that happens because you're inviting so much controversy, right? It's funny, like if you think about this in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's the worst idea because I don't like drafting a young quarterback and throwing them to the fire immediately. Like look at what the Packers did with Jordan Love. Everyone just wrote Jordan Love off because he sat behind Rodgers for two or three seasons and they allowed him to develop and learn. I think that's what Caleb Williams needs, but with how much you know, all this talk around Fields, the number one pick, like if they did that, you couldn't reasonably explain that to fans. Like, we're going to hold on to Justin Fields while allowing Caleb Williams to develop in the background. Like, I think it's a logical thing to do, but it makes sense. It makes more sense when you have an actual, you know, like an Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, or
that's
Prescott at quarterback, or, you know, who, Jared Goff at quarterback, whoever it might be.
Because that's the first thing I thought of as well when I thought of this was, well, you know, it's like, on the one hand, it doesn't seem like this would be a really good situation. But then on the other hand, you did have the Packers. And, you know, the Packers drafted Jordan Love, and he sat for a couple of years behind Aaron Rodgers. But the biggest difference is there's like 15 years of age between Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love. You know, one was, you know, Rodgers was going to have to leave at some point, and so they went out and they got Love late in the first round, you know, and they made that trade to do it. Whereas in the situation with Fields and Williams, there's like 2 years of age difference between them, you know, so it's a lot different when you're talking about two young quarterbacks who are presumably, you know, one is supposed to be hitting his prime here pretty soon and another one just coming in the league. So I don't think that that would be the optimal situation. And, you know, there's all this talk that there's no market for Fields, and, you know, it's probably accurate, you know, but I think what's probably more, even more accurate is there's no market for Fields because nobody wants to pay, you know, the draft, you know, the, like a second or round or, you know, better, whatever package of draft picks to get a guy like Justin Fields. I mean, the bottom line is the guy is 10-28. As a starter. You can blame the system. You can blame the talent around him. Even though they went out and got DJ Moore last year, they had better talent around him. The guy was a first round pick 3 years ago, the same draft. And you brought up Jordan Love, the same draft as Jordan Love. And Love looked better as a first year starter after sitting 2 years last year than the guy with more experience, Justin Fields, did, you know, regardless of who your offensive coordinator is. So I can't see the Bears keeping both guys. You know, my guess is this could walk like right up until draft night, and somewhere in the middle of draft night where either Fields gets traded or, you know, the pick gets traded, whatever it happens to be. If they finally, like, it's in the Bears' interest to play it obviously as close to the vest as possible. Keep everything, hold on to all your options, because all it does is turn into a better bargaining chip for you, I think, down the road. So that's what I think is going to happen. Either the pick gets moved or Fields gets moved at some point. And, you know, again, it might take right up until draft night before it all happens.
Yeah. And honestly, with the Bears contemplating this, it just shows to me that they want to draft Caleb Williams, but they can't pawn Justin Fields off for nearly enough that they can get. And so they're almost like, how can we build back up Justin Fields' interest? What can we do in order to get, you know, something in return or exchange for Justin Fields? So it's really felt like, you know, they haven't done anything to help themselves out. They've allowed Justin Fields to become the scrutiny or the scapegoat. Now they want to trade said scapegoat and get something out of him. Well, it's like, well, you're also the same organization that is contemplating whether or not he's even, you know, an NFL quarterback. So what would make other teams interested in picking up someone like himself, right? So, like, you're not doing anything to help.
How are you giving him any value? Yeah,
right.
That's right.
And so the more you hold on to him, again, I think it's like, we're not getting enough value out of him. So what can we do to potentially build his value back up?
Right. Right. I can't see any way that they're both on the same roster next year. But in the meantime, you've got a lot of other moves being made. One of them being Sam Darnold going to Minnesota. Do you buy or sell him as the answer at quarterback in the post Kirk Cousins era with the Vikings?
I do not buy him as the next quarterback in Minnesota. And I'm really interested to see, you know, what Minnesota's overall plan is here, because they clearly didn't want to pay Kirk Cousins. I think Kevin McConnell is the head coach, or O'Donnell. I think he's a little bit, I think his ego, he pumps his ego up a little bit. I think he thinks he can win with just about like any quarterback, right? Like, I think he's like, oh, you know, I can, I get like he's trying to basically do what San Francisco has done in Minnesota, being like, you know, I don't need a top end quarterback being an offensive guy in order to win. And so I don't know what the answer is at Minnesota. I think they're going to like piece something together and then, you know, just get a bunch of guys like Sam Darnold, make it a quarterback competition and basically say whoever wins, wins type situation. But to me, a more interesting concept would be like if the Vikings draft a quarterback this season and like say someone like Jaden Daniels fell to Minnesota with like Justin Jefferson and, you know, Addison, Jordan Addison at wide receiver. Like, I think that they could potentially go the draft route this season to go along with the Sam Darnold and whoever else they get in into training camp.
And that's what I think it's got to be. And like, they're sitting there at number 11. They're just outside the top 10. So they're obviously not high enough to sort of control their own destiny. Would they try to trade up? I think it's going to depend on what quarterback is there. Like, how much does O'Connell potentially cover it? You know, just about every Notre Dame fan's least favorite quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. You know,
like, that's a guy who I also think might end up in Minnesota.
That's what I'm saying. Like picking at number 11, that's a guy who could potentially, you know, be in that range and end up in Minnesota. And maybe they trade up a couple of spots, you know, to you know, with somebody, you know, into the top 10 to try to get him. You know,
maybe I think that is a
distinct possibility. And like, because when I saw Darnold, it's like I thought kind of initially what Father David was saying, it's like let the tank begin. And that's kind of what it seemed like. But they have been somewhat active on the defensive side of the ball, you know, addressing, you know, defensive guys with free agency and stuff like that. So they're trying to get better on defense, but then they go out and get a guy like Darnold. I thought Josh Dobbs played fairly well when they made the trade for him after the Cousins injury last year. Now, the team didn't show it, but they also had, you know, horrible running backs and, you know, nothing like there was basically other than Justin Jefferson. And remember, Justin Jefferson was hurt for a good chunk of the season last year as well. I guess they had Jordan Addison, who turned out pretty good. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, whatever quarterback that they have is going to have a couple of pretty good, you know, one excellent wide receiver and another pretty good wide receiver. They need to address the running back. The offensive line isn't horrible. I think that they're going to end up trying to draft a quarterback. They're either at number 11,
I mean, they
or
have
trading
TJ Hockenson at tight end as well. Remember, they traded with the Lions
right.
to get TJ Hockenson. So it's like they have a solid wide receiver and you know, tight end room. And I'm glad you brought this up. Bryce says drafting McCarthy would be a huge mistake. Listen, Bryce, I was not high on McCarthy myself, but I watched the entire NFL Network day of the quarterbacks at the Combine. And you know what everyone talked about was how McCarthy could be passing Jaden McDaniels. Like, they're basically saying, you know, one and two is set.
Jaden Daniels. You keep adding and subtracting, like, mix and O's and whatever else.
Yeah, long day, guys. But Williams and May are one and two, and I've heard a lot of conversation that McCarthy could be the number three guy, right? Like, and they have him ahead of Penix. They have him ahead of Milton. Like, he is the guy. It's going to be either Daniels or McCarthy at three or four. And, you know, I like to think I know a lot about football, but when all of these NFL guys are consistently saying, you know, McCarthy is on a lot of people's radars, he's got to be doing something right.
They love him. I know. So he's going to go in the first round. It's just a matter of where he goes.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Fill in the blank. New Washington Commanders offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury is blank.
Is making me nervous because the Commanders have been the doormat of the NFC East for a good time now. And not only is their new head coach the Cowboys' ex-defensive coordinator, but said defensive coordinator is slowly bringing along some of those guys from Dallas that he liked. You know, Washington's got some good draft picks, and now you bring in, you know, a guy who is a really good offensive coordinator, at least, you know, a respected offensive mind. It just kind of makes you nervous as an NFC division rival that, you know, Washington could be on the track of turning things around here.
Maybe I'll end up eating my words, but I just think Cliff Kingsbury is so overrated as an offensive coordinator. Look, you know, a timeline of Cliff Kingsbury's ascension, you know, in the minds of the football world. His stock goes through the roof in 2012 when he's coaching Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M and Manziel wins the Heisman. Okay, so he parlays that into a head coaching job at Texas Tech where he has two winning seasons. The first season that he had, 8-5 was his best year. He becomes head coach there. He's got both Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes on the roster. 2013, he goes 8-5. Mayfield is a part-time player. Mahomes isn't even playing yet. Mayfield ends up transferring to Oklahoma the next year. And so in 2 years with Patrick Mahomes as his starting quarterback, he wins a grand total of 12 games in two seasons with Mahomes as his starting quarterback. He gets fired after 2018 after three straight losing seasons. But guess what happens? It's 2018. Do you know what happened in 2018? Patrick Mahomes threw 50 touchdowns with the Kansas City Chiefs. So all of a sudden, because Cliff Kingsbury was attached to Patrick Mahomes 5 years earlier, he goes from getting fired as the Texas Tech head coach. He was almost going to be, remember, on the USC staff, but he turns it instead into a head coaching gig with the Cardinals, where he gets to draft his own quarterback. He goes and gets his guy, Kyler Murray, just a year after the Cardinals had drafted Josh Rosen in the first round, but they throw Rosen to the ditch and they, you know, because he handpicks his quarterback. How good was, you know, Kyler Murray had his flashes, but he goes 9 games under 500 in 4 years with the Cardinals, gets fired 1 year at USC. Caleb Williams regresses in that 1 year. And now he's the offensive coordinator back in the NFL again with the Washington Commanders. Again, maybe I'll eat my words because they're going to play the Cowboys twice a year, but I just really think that his star has been attached to two guys, Johnny Manziel and Patrick Mahomes, and he really hasn't proven within a, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt that he really deserves all the credit that he has gotten over the course of his career, all because of those two guys.
I agree. And a lot of people in the chat have pointed out, along with what you're saying, he is failing up.
Yep. That's what I agree. That's what I think as well. You know, it's just like his name was attached to those two guys, just like any guy for a couple of years who was attached to Sean McVay was going to become, you know, either a coordinator or a head coach someplace. So, like I said, maybe I'll eat my words and he'll prove otherwise, but I haven't seen it so far. It hasn't been, maybe he'll be better as a coordinator than he was as a head coach. But again, it's not like Caleb Williams, you know, it would have been hard for Caleb Williams to take another step up based on the first year that he had, but didn't look great in his season with Cliff Kingsbury. All right. Omar wants to know why the Cowboys.
You're bringing this one in, huh?
Let Derrick Henry go to Baltimore. And it's just
Jerry. All in.
Cheapskate, man.
All in.
They don't go the free agency route. They re-sign their own guys. And they just, you know, they re-sign their own guys and they go the draft route. They, you know, we'll see if they can fill the holes that they need.
Listen, the Cowboys are going to draft a running back, and I'm just praying that it's Audric Estime.
I actually like the moves that they made last year, like when they went out and they got Gilmore and they got Brandon Cooks. It took them half the year to finally figure out that they could throw to Brandon Cooks and, you know, right, like include him in the offense. Gilmore, they would have been completely lost defensively if they hadn't gone out and got Gilmore last year. But those are two of the bigger moves that they've ever made, and those weren't necessarily free agency as well. There were trades, you know, involved.
So I heard something today. I'll send this to you. Well, you know, when I was listening to it, I actually decided not to send it to you because I knew it would upset you. But I was listening to a Rich Eisen today, and he did a segment on this. And basically what he said is, you know, everyone's coming back to this Jerry Jones comment of all in. And Rich Eisen believes the interpretation of all in, and this is, you know, what he's heard around the combine and being around, you know, a lot of NFL people, is he thinks that Jerry's version of all in is not restructuring Dak's contract and basically saying they are all in with Dak. This is Dak's situation to figure out and handle going into the season. And then, so I don't know how much, again, validity there is to that, but that's what he is being viewed as all in, is Jerry's stubbornness to not rework Dak's deal and allow him to, you know, essentially ride out with the situation. Because if the Cowboys redid Dak's deal, they'd free up a lot of money to go get other pieces elsewhere.
Right.
But instead of not restructuring, it's like, okay, Dak, the load is on your shoulders.
So he's saying,
figure it out.
It's all in on this season to get it done. So he's basically putting it all on Dak.
Yes.
What Rich Eisen is saying.
Yes.
Well, if that's the case, then I don't think that's the way to go. But
I mean, did we expect anything less? Yes, Tyler Evans, they do need to release Michael Gallup.
And remember, a couple of years ago, when they traded Amari Cooper, they decided, you know, they traded away Amari Cooper when Michael Gallup was coming off an injury. And they were basically saying that, and then they re-signed, I think they franchise Dalton Schultz for that year, whom of course they've since let walk. But they basically were justifying trading away Cooper's salary by keeping Michael Gallup and Dalton Schultz for that year. And like in the aggregate, their vision was those two guys were going to be more productive than Amari Cooper.
Yeah, and both those guys aren't going to be on the roster next season.
Right, right. So. Exactly. That's all you had to do is wind us up. All right, well, that's going to do it for tonight. Again, Vince will be in here tomorrow. Jesse, your last show for the week. But I will see you soon. Jesse's heading into South Bend for birthday shenanigans this weekend. So I will see you soon.
Yes, I have a lot of things to get packed up, but I will be arriving this evening.
All right, sounds good. Hit the like button before you leave, subscribe, rate, and review, and we will talk to you on Thursday on IB Nation.